It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Parrott.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Pride Month is in full swing, and communities around Wisconsin celebrate LGBTQ culture and rights in different ways.
Organizers of the Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project are touring the state, making stops at Pride events to showcase a new exhibit. It gives more visibility to the people, places, and events that made Wisconsin's LGBTQ community what it is today.
The exhibit is called Summer to Be Seen, and it debuted at a Pride rally in Ripon and concludes in Whitewater. Michael Takosh is board chair of the Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project. Michael, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Can you start by just acquainting us with the work of the Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project and what it encompasses?
Absolutely. So we are proud to be the state's leading authority on local LGBTQ history. Our organization was founded in 1994 as a collaboration between local researchers and the One National Gay and Lesbian Archives of Los Angeles, which is now known as the One Institute. So we chronicle, document, and preserve the hidden histories of Wisconsin in an attempt to reconnect Wisconsin with its past to inspire its future.
How did you come up with a plan to tour the state for the project's 30th anniversary?
That's an interesting one. So we have seen a massive generational shift in the past few years where the emerging generations, including Generation Z and Alpha, don't really understand the concept of Pride being a day or a weekend or an event or even a month, because this is just who they are every day. They don't come out of a closet and celebrate once a year. They don't go somewhere or have to, you know, be in a gated community or a festival park to celebrate themselves. And they want to see this visibility in their hometowns, no matter where they live. They're not going to leave their community to be who they are. And that's an important transition in LGBT history, because for centuries, our elders had to leave their small town communities to be who they were, because they couldn't live that life in their hometowns. So hearing that feedback over the years, as we had an exhibit at Pride Fest Milwaukee from 1994 to 2019, we really thought about like what's next and what makes sense. So we realized that the right thing to do was not to ask people to come to our history to enjoy and celebrate and connect to it, but to bring the history into the communities of Wisconsin, to be in the small town streets, to in those city parks, in those community centers all over the state, and really let people know, you know, we've always been here in all corners of Wisconsin. And whether or not we were seen doesn't matter, because we know we were there. And these stories prove that. And what we're also trying to do with this outreach is to source new stories. Who are the emerging leaders throughout Wisconsin? So we're really seeing this as an outreach and networking and hopefully an inspirational great awakening. I have been in Wisconsin for most of my 50 years, and I have to say, I feel like we're in a LGBT leadership crisis. There is no one unifying the masses in any direction the way that previous organizations or leaders did. And to be fair, we're in an election year, and there's a lot on stake. It's not a year for a party. It's a year for activation. It's a year for mobilization. It's a year for education. So personally, to me, being in the streets of Wisconsin and inspiring youth to vote and to take agency for their own lives and to be visible and vocal in their hometown communities, there is no greater investment we can make.
And your tour itself, with about 16 stops, that has made visible just how many events in communities all over the state are out there, celebrating Pride, celebrating LGBTQ community. What does that say about Wisconsin?
It's remarkable. So I was on the board of directors of Milwaukee Pride for 10 years. And throughout that time frame, we were aware of emerging prides around the state, but there were nowhere near as many as there are now. Within the past 5 years, literally since the pandemic, the number has more than quadrupled. There are over 40 hometown pride celebrations in Wisconsin, ranging from very small communities like Lake Pepin to very large and established communities like Duluth Superior, who host the oldest and longest running Pride event in the state. Not a place you'd expect to find that, right? I think it says that Wisconsin remembers its progressive heritage and it wants to move back in that direction after, you know, years of being told that, you know, they were wrong. They're not going back. They're going forward. And, you know, as in alignment with the state motto, I applaud them wholeheartedly. To learn that there were so many as we were doing our outreach, our planning and our design for the tour was overwhelming, even to us. So I think that, you know, if we can bring great visibility to these hometown prides and really elevate their efforts and really build unity among them, there's an opportunity for a statewide movement and some statewide connectivity and community between organizations that might feel like they're on their own, you know, on an island, shouting at the wind. And to know that there are 39 other organizations like yours trying to achieve the same thing all over the state is powerful.
Michael Takash is with us from the Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project as we talk about its Summer to Be Seen tour, exhibitions happening at local pride events around the state. Michael, what kind of questions or other feedback have you received from, you know, people coming up to this tour, this exhibition, as they experience your panel displays?
We hear tremendous positive feedback, especially from youth who can't believe that we are coming to their hometowns. They thought that they would need to drive, you know, 2 or 3 hours to a big city. And maybe that's not an option for them financially, logistically. You know, we see a lot of hometown organizers who feel the love and feel, you know, the sense of being part of something bigger. And, you know, a lot of the youth today in Wisconsin are hearing these horrible, you know, retro messages, these messages of self-destruction and judgment, attempting to isolate and destabilize them so they don't become the next generation of Wisconsin's LGBTQ leadership. And the sad part is their elders heard those same messages, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago. And the playbook is deliberate and the impact can be very destructive. But if we can overcome that by providing an alternative, by connecting people to history and heritage and letting them know that they have a community and that community has always been here and there's nothing wrong with them because they're just another member of this long lineage of people, whether they knew it or not. If we can provide that hope and that faith that the future can be better, brighter, more vibrant, more inclusive, more supportive, again, you know, that is the value of our investment. We're a nonprofit organization. We don't charge anything for any of our services. Our website is free. Our content is free. And, you know, that's because we feel it's important to get this out into the world at a time when LGBT content is being censored, being removed from libraries, being, you know, forbidden to be spoken in schools around the nation. The more we can reach people in person, online, the better.
And let's tour a bit of these panels now. Ralph Caruana, 1876, forced to live as a woman despite identifying as a man. Can you talk a little bit about Ralph's life? I've been looking at pictures, dressed extremely stylish for the era.
Yeah, so our Ralph was a bit of a playboy. He was a two-timer. In fact, that's how he was found out in the first place. His wife found out that he was dating another woman and that he planned to marry the other woman, making him Wisconsin's first trans bigamist, perhaps. But he was picked up by the police in downtown Milwaukee under the charges that, you know, he was in fact a she and that he was disguising himself to deceive women and to perhaps have some untoward criminal intentions. But Ralph really had no criminal intentions. Ralph was living his best life. He was, you know, a womanizer. He was a sportsman. He was a gambler. He was into music and fashion and art. He was really ahead of his time, and he was living large. And unfortunately, after being found out, you know, he was ordered to return to the life of a woman that he never was. And this misgendering and this, you know, attempt to shame him really didn't work because there's news reports that he returned to being Ralph and, you know, was caught in, you know, in cahoots with other women over the next few years. So it just goes to show that the idea of trans identity, the idea that gender is expansive and not a binary, is not a new idea. It's not a modern invention. There have been people living trans experiences as long as there have been people, dating back to the first people of Wisconsin and in Indigenous times. And Ralph was an evidence of that. His story was shared all over the world. And unfortunately, he was known as the man-woman of Milwaukee, which is not, you know, exactly the most courteous title. But he achieved international fame as a speaker afterwards, traveling on the vaudeville circuit, and lived quite a life. Unfortunately, the luck kind of ran out. He wound up marrying a man and died a woman in Chicago.
Let's fast forward now to August of 1961. Part of the tour and panel display tells the history of the Black Knight Brawl in Milwaukee. Can you talk a little bit about what happened here?
On August 5th, 1961, the Black Knight Tavern, which was one of the only bars in Milwaukee, gay or straight, to allow what was then called cross-dressing, was the target of a homophobic attack. Four servicemen were ordered on a drinking game dare to come to the Black Knight, which was a known gay bar and really known probably more today. We would probably call it more of a queer space because it was a favorite of the gender expansive community. Drag queens hung out there. What we would today call transgender people hung out there. It was a place that you could come as you are and you would be accepted and you would find community. You'd find other people like yourself in a safe place. And because the bar was on a police payoff system that kept many of Milwaukee's early gay bars safe and its customers protected. But unfortunately, these sailors came and started trouble. And Josie Carter, who was at that point a 23-year-old ex-Navy citizen, was enjoying cocktails with her husband, the bouncer. And, you know, this trouble broke out. The bouncer tried to break it up and the bartender jumped into the fight. And finally, Josie ended the fight by coming outside with two beer bottles and knocking the sailors unconscious. They left and vowed to come back, saying they were going to clean up the place and that, you know, they're going to be sorry, throwing some homophobic epithets out the window as they drove off. The bar owner wanted to close. He wanted Josie to leave. He wanted them to kind of evacuate for safety reasons. He knew that they could come back with guns and he really didn't want to deal with, you know, military men tearing his bar apart. But Josie made a really historic choice that night. She said, no, I'm not leaving. We're not leaving. We're not closing and we're not running. The time for running is over. We don't run from fights anymore. Enough is enough. And I understand her mindset. There was a lot going on in Milwaukee at that time. There had been a court-ordered raid program in Juneau Park, which was a favorite place for most of Milwaukee's gay men, that led to some pretty awful police brutality as they tried to make their quotas and arrest as many homosexuals as they could. People were arrested simply for walking down the sidewalk. There was really no criminal activity at all. And someone actually was beaten to death, which really terrified the gay elders of this time. And one of them shared with me in November 2015 that, you know, this was a moment where they had to decide, like, are we scared or are we going to be brave?
I was going to just jump in here to say that, Josie, you were able to get such vivid details about this, about this bar fight and about what happened. And that is very much a part of this history project. You're able to preserve that documentation.
Absolutely. I spent a lot of time with Josie in the last years of her life, and she shared a lot of details. But the irony of this whole situation is that, you know, she inspired like the first uprising in Wisconsin history of LGBT people. She told people it is a choice to be the victim. It is a choice not to stand up against this. She said that night, there are more of us than there are of them. Why are we the ones running? And people had never heard that in their life. They were expected to be passive and docile and take the punches and take the abuse. And they were told their whole lives, if this is the life you choose, then this is what you deserve. And that night, everything changed.
Michael, thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing this history.
Thank you.
That is Michael Takash, board chair of the Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project. We talked with him about the project's 30th anniversary tour, bringing localized exhibits to Pride events around Wisconsin.
Information about the tour and its stops is at wislgbthistory.com. If you've seen the tour, if you've been part of a Pride rally in your own community, tell us about it. What was it like? Did it inspire you?
Send us an email at wisconsintoday@wpr.org or leave us a voicemail. You can text us as well at 888-642-0232. That's 888-642-0232. And we'd love to see your photos.